Welcome to Equipping the Corps. Today I'm chatting with Major Connor Stewart, the Project Officer for the Individual Armor Team here at Marine Corps Systems Command. Ensuring the Marine Corps is the premier fighting force starts with the individual Marine, and Major Stewart's team equips them with the systems like body armor and packs to set them up for success. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I know it took me a while to get you to agree, so this is exciting for me.
We're looking forward to the conversation.
So let's talk individual armor. What exactly falls under this umbrella?
So the name individual armor is a little misleading. We do have helmets, plate carriers, hard and soft armor inserts, but we also have all of our load bearing. So the USMC main pack, the variety of pouches, rifle mag pouches, stamen pouches, those are all part of our program, as well as iPro and hearing protection.
Okay. You said hard and soft armor.
Yes.
What's the, pretty self-explanatory, but can you explain the difference between those two?
So the hard armor plates are the upgraded version, essentially. So when you're just wearing your soft armor, it does provide a level of protection, frag, some 9mm. But when you add the hard armor to it, that's where we get the full rifle protection and get our full heaviest version of our ballistic protection that the Marines can wear.
You just mentioned the plate carrier. Can you talk about the evolution of where we used to be and where we're at today?
Yes. So 12, 13 years ago at this point, when the IMTV, it was the improved modular tactical vest, that was a heavy, bulky piece of gear. And if you wore a medium with four E-sappies, you're looking at over 30 pounds just in the carrier itself before you put magazines, water, food, everything else you have to go out on patrol with.
Pretty heavy.
So, yes. So we've been doing a concerted effort across the Marine Corps in the last 10 years of trying to reduce the bulk, reduce the weight and the stiffness, and try to get to a point where we do have a carrier that is comfortable and still provides a level of protection. So we went through a couple different versions. We are on generation 3 of our plate carrier now. If you are wearing a plate carrier generation 3 and in a medium with four E-sappies, you're looking at about 17 to 20 pounds. So a good 10 pound reduction. And then we also have a new lightweight plate. It doesn't stop the same things that the E-sappy does, but it's 38% lighter. So when you add PC Gen 3 plus four lightweight plates, you're looking at 16 and a half pounds in the body armor instead of the 30 plus pounds from 10 years ago.
Big difference.
Huge. And a lot of it comes down to, you know, as infantry Marines, it's not our job to be comfortable. But if we can achieve a level of comfort that increases our effectiveness, then that's a good thing. And we also get a reduction on the lower body injuries, the knees, the hips, the lower back. We do have a reduction in those injuries when we do reduce the overall load on the individual Marine. So there are some long hikes that these Marines do, some very heavy movements, and we need to make sure that we're reducing weight wherever we can.
The lighter, the better.
Yes.
And the faster. If we're lighter, we're faster.
Yes, definitely.
So you also mentioned that helmets fall under your program as well.
They do.
And I know those have evolved as well. Almost all of our equipment has, of course, evolved over time. Can you talk a little bit about the current helmets that we have?
So with the evolution of helmets, I'm actually going to start talking about the oldest helmets first, because any unit that you go to, if they're getting ready to go to the field, you're going to hear a staff sergeant or a gunny yell at the Marines, hey, grab your Kevlar. Well, we haven't had true Kevlars in our inventory in about 15 years. So it's been an interesting evolution, but we still call it Kevlar. Kevlar is an aramid, so it's a fabrics-based material. It retains water. We end up having to use more Kevlar to protect against higher threats. So if we had a full rifle protection Kevlar helmet, we'd be looking at a pretty heavy, like 5-7 pound helmet.
Oh, wow.
The current helmets, we actually use ultra high molecular weight polyethylene, which does not roll off the tongue like grab your Kevlar. Even if you turn into the acronym and say, oh, grab your UHMWPE, it still does not roll off the tongue. So we're going to have Marines say, grab your Kevlar. Where's your Kevlar? That's going to be in our word bank for a while. But we are able to achieve a higher level of protection with the polyethylene-based product than we were with the aramid. and actually see reductions in weight. So the enhanced combat helmet, which the majority of the Marines have, we're looking at about 3.35 pounds for a large. When we go into our high cut helmet, which has the rails, different pad system, improved retention, that thing, you're looking at about 3.4 pounds. So still less than the Aramid helmet of the past while providing a higher level of protection.
And there's not that much of a weight difference, it seems, between the high cut and then the regular ECH.
No, there's not a whole lot because we take some material away mm-hmm. when we cut it higher and it goes from the mid cut to a high cut above the ear. But then we add some material back onto it. We add rails to the side. The pads are a little bit different. And the octile retention system is similar to that of a construction hard hat.
Okay.
Where you reach behind your head and you turn the dial and it tightens around your head instead of just providing the north-south adjustments from the past with just a chin strap alone. Now we can tighten the chin strap, but we can also tighten around the circumference of the head. And that provides a greater level of stability, especially when we start adding more attachments, larger and more capable night vision devices. So we want to provide a more stable platform.
So it can stay in place. And when you move your head, it's not moving about.
Yes, we don't want a bunch of bobbleheads.
No. How do we determine who's going to get the high cut and then who gets just the regular ECH?
So the high cut version of the helmet is following the fielding of the PVS-31s, the SPMVG, as well as requirements for double hearing protection. So right now, essentially the infantry and infantry-like are being fielded the PVS-31 night vision device, and then they also have the main driver of double hearing protection, which is the MAWS, the Carl Gustav rocket.
Okay.
So if it's a Marine who has SPMVGs and or regularly employs the MAWS, then they're going to get a high cut. The rest of the squad or the team may have the regular ECH.
Okay, so it's based on who needs the additional protection.
Yes.
We've talked about the two main components of what a Marine is wearing, but another big item to come out of your program is the short shoulder harness and small hip belt attachments. Can you talk a bit more about those?
Yes. So the USMC pack is, as I said, part of our portfolio of equipment. In 2016, the requirements were updated that established the fit attribute requirement. That requirement is anything that is worn by the individual Marine has to fit from the second percentile female up to the 98th percentile male. So for perspective, your second percent female is roughly 4'11 and 106 pounds, and then the 98th percentile male is 6'4, 6'5, 230-ish. In that realm. So we have a pretty broad range of body sizes that we have to make sure that all of our gear fits. For the carriers and the helmets, we've been able to add sizes, extra small up to extra large.
Okay.
For the pack, we really couldn't add just a new size because at the end of the day, every Marine's a rifleman and every Marine is going to carry what is on the gear list. So we couldn't just make a smaller pack. Everybody needs to carry the same pack. What we're able to do is change where that load actually sits on the body. So for a lot of the smaller stature Marines out there, that shoulder harness that was part of the pack, it allowed the pack to ride too low. And then the hip belt was too large. I've had friends who were smaller stature, are smaller stature, and they were going to a store and buying one of those pool noodles, cutting it in half, wrapping it around their waist, and then tightening the belt over that pool noodle because the belt in its most tight configuration still wouldn't actually touch the body. So what we did was we did a couple of different evaluations. MCRD San Diego was one of the units, as well as the basic school over here in Quantico. We got about 200 prototype frame and hip belt assemblies and tested them out. And the results ended up in the development of a small hip belt and a short shoulder harness. And that provides the greater size range to accommodate fit and properly distribute the weight of a loaded pack on Marines. So these assemblies don't only accommodate short stature Marines. Every single Marine who goes to SIF for the individual issue gets sized. So you could end up with a very, very tall, very skinny Marine who wears the small hip belt with a standard shoulder harness, or you could have somebody on the short stature who gets issued both. But it all comes down to a personalization and customization that we're trying to achieve. There's just a broader size range that we can fit. And those are available in your local consolidated issue facility or SIF, and they can be issued out to individual Marines. So if Marines haven't been to SIF, they've been at their unit for a while, they can bring their pack back to SIF, get measured, and they can get those appropriate size parts swapped out.
Oh, nice.
And get the gear that they need at the end of the day.
Okay. Is the short shoulder harness and the small hip belt only for smaller Marines, or are those also used, let's say, if the standard issue, somebody's just a big guy or gal and it doesn't fit, could they also add an extension to it, or is that?
They are broken apart. So if you go to SIF, you're not getting, the only option is not to just get the small and the short.
Okay.
You could get a standard, which also has a long configuration.
Okay.
So short shoulder harness allows size configuration for either a short or the standard. So you can go from 14 to 16 inches with a short or 16 to 18 inches with a standard. And the current shoulder harness goes from standard and long, so 18 to 20 inches in torso length. And then the small hip belt, that waist sizes ranges from 27 to 37 inches, whereas the current hip belt is 32 to 42 inches. So we gained 2 inches on the short end for the shoulder harness and added 5 inches of waist circumference to fit the smallest. And then we still go all the way up to the 42 for a standard.
Okay. So we already had the standard and then the long. So the short is the new.
Yes.
Okay.
You could essentially extend the standard to make it a long, but we didn't have anything on the short side.
When we talk about fully integrated infantry weapon systems, what does that mean for individual armor?
For us, it means that we need to take a holistic look and making sure that we are not just changing something on the helmet without the impacts to the things that are attached to the helmet or that the helmet touches. So that's part of the reason why we went with that high cut. It was a response to the deliberate urgent needs statement from the infantry saying they needed a purpose-built helmet that did integrate the PVS-31s as well as hearing protection. So we want to make sure that we are not making changes in this vacuum and not considering all of the second and third order effects. The plate carrier needs to be worn, obviously, with the plates, but you need to be able to wear the pack over the top of that plate carrier. You need to be able to wear the helmet that is properly balanced with the equipment that you're wearing. The enhanced combat helmet, we also saw issues when we started fielding the M27 and the SCO with eye relief. You couldn't get a proper eye relief with the sight because you couldn't get your head in a good cheek weld position to actually be able to see out of the scope as well as we could. So taking all of that feedback and working across the teams, whether it's the weapons, the optics team, working with the amphibious assault branch, the light armored reconnaissance branch, working with all of those different pieces of Marine Corps Systems Command to make sure that we are doing a holistic approach and truly considering all of those impacts on the individual Marine.
Does your office work closely with Gruntworks, which I know used to be under GCES, but they've currently moved over to DC SEAL? But
yes,
I would assume that
we do.
Okay.
So we work with Gruntworks a lot. As the Marine Expeditionary Rifle Squad and the integration focus over there, that's not all he does over there, though. They're currently doing an update on the anthropometry study. There's a 2010 study that the Marine Corps relies on that we specifically rely on to make sure that we are building the sizes properly to fit the Marines who actually exist in our Marine Corps population. So Gruntworks is actually doing an update to that anthropometric study right now, focusing in on those tails, the second percentile and the 98th percentile. So they're feeding that information back to us constantly so we can make sure that we are continuing to adjust our sizing. We have extra small short ESAPIs that are on contract now and should be available this summer. And that is based on the reports that we get from the anthropometric studies.
Okay.
We also do all of the MCLEAP, the Marine Corps Load Effects Assessment Program.
Yeah.
We do all those studies with GruntWorks to make sure that we are testing a mobility requirement when we do have that holistic look for body armor. We outfit squads of Marines with different levels of body armor, different weapon systems, different plates, different plate carriers, and they go through that mobility course and they get timed and we see what the differences are when we do add weight, take away weight, give them a different weapon. We get all that feedback.
Does the mobility testing also help with seeing like, oh, if it's pinching in a certain place or it's hitting too short or anything like that?
So what we call our design approach is an iterative design approach. So we'll look at what's currently out there. We'll see what needs to be adjusted. We will come up with a new design. So for instance, the plate carrier generation 3, based on the generation 1 and generation 2 as its starting point. Going from a design on a piece of paper to something that's actually built and then worn by the Marine, we want to have multiple iterations where can industry build it?
Yeah.
Can the Marine wear it? Can the Marine wear it and move in those or conduct those different movements that would be expected in combat? And we take all that feedback and continuously make adjustments. Even after we go into our initial production, members of the team, they go out to these infantry units and others and do focus groups feedback after they come back from their first deployment. The first guys who wore it, they went and deployed, and then the body armor team went out and surveyed and said, what did you like? What didn't you like? And that fed back into recent adjustments to the design. So that way, those plate carrier generation 3 that are arriving this summer are going to be slightly different than the ones that were built and issued 3 years ago.
Because we're constantly improving.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great. We kind of talked about this when we mentioned GruntWorks team, but how does your office work with all the other program offices in CISCOM? Or do you work closely with them?
We do. So we work with the optics team and the weapons team very regularly because at the end of the day, the optic is mounted to, or the night vision device is mounted to the helmet. The rifles need magazines. The magazines need magazine pouches. We need something other than our pocket to hold this stuff in. So all that pouch development and the different iterations that we've done, even on the helmet, are all closely linked with those other teams. And then we also do work with GruntWorks, PMAAA, the Amphibious Assault Vehicle Branch, and a few others. But we do try to reach out and get feedback from as many different units as possible, because at the end of the day, we are ones that are actually supporting all of the Marine Corps. Anyone that gets a plate carrier, at some point, somewhere along the line, somebody from my office had a hand in getting that to that individual Marine.
What about our sister services? I know we tend to work closely with the Army, and we technically fall under the Navy, but do we work with any of those offices as we're looking at new gear?
We do. So we have a inter-service body armor working group that meets once every 6 months, and we get reps from all of the services. And a lot of it is focusing on where can we find common ground? Where is the requirement that we could end up going in on, whether it's on the front end on testing and development or on the back end with actually buying the same item X, whatever it is. There are some simple ones like canteen cups and that sort of thing that are common across services. But then obviously we have our own uniforms, we have our own plate carriers, we have our own helmets, but we do regularly work with them to share data, share feedback from the Marines, and any of the test reports that we do get. We're always trying to work across the services and make sure that everyone's making an informed decision on what that next generation gear does look like and what it protects at the end of the day.
What about MARSOC or SOCOM? I know that theirs is, their acquisition process is a little bit different than ours, but do we ever look at what they're doing?
We do, and SOCOM sends reps to the inter-service body and working group, so we do work with the engineers that support those programs. So we are constantly sharing information across, and they are one of the partners of that working group.
Okay. How's the work we're doing in your program supporting force modernization, or as we sometimes call it, force design?
In support of force design and modernization, the biggest thing that we're doing is getting after the improvements to the individual kit. We have other programs have issued out and are currently fielding some very high-end tech. And at the end of the day, the individual fighting load for the individual Marine needs updating. And that's what we're really pushing for right now, because we do want to continue to reduce bulk, reduce weight, reduce stiffness, increase the mobility, decrease the number of lower exoskeletal injuries and other issues, while providing the best gear possible to the Marines who are going into harm's way. And that's the biggest thing that we're doing. And the entire team, whether it's the engineers, finance, logistics, the contractors who actually write the contracts, all of them together are all focused on that individual Marine and what is going to help him or her do their job effectively. So whatever climb, place, whoever the adversary is, we want to make sure that we're continuously pushing the best possible gear down to that individual Marine.
How are infantry Marines being equipped differently today versus when you first joined the Marine Corps?
A lot of it just comes back to that force modernization.
Yeah.
There are so many improvements to the individual fighting kit that are just absolutely amazing. And the Marines are doing amazing things with those improvements. On the load-bearing side of things, I mean, we have had improvements. We had the ILBE pack for a while. Now we have the USMC main pack. We had the IMTV that was 30 pounds. And now we've cut that in about half with the body armor that we're issuing out now. So we are becoming more lethal and more effective every single day. And we really see the effects of that force modernization down at the individual infantry rifle platoon level.
It has to be pretty neat to be able to, as you're in the Corps, watch the Corps evolve and change, you know, from whenever you join. It just constantly is changing and modernizing. So how it was, I don't know what year you joined. I'm going to assume like
2011
is completely different. I mean, we stay true to our values and our core values of what the Marine Corps is, but we've evolved as well.
We have. But down to that individual Marine, that individual rifleman, 0311 is still as good, as lethal, as effective as 10 years ago. However, now we've given him some more tools. So now he can shoot further, more accurate. The Bino SP MVGs with the white phosphorus tubes at night is an absolute game changer. When we had PBS-14s with green tubes when I first came in, and you'd stepping in potholes and stumbling through the woods, and now you could run a marathon with those white phosphorus tubes and the binos. So we've definitely caught up and exceeded expectations in a lot of different areas for providing the tools to make that Marine even more lethal than they would have been.
We've kind of already talked about this one, exciting things happening in your program. Is there any other updates you want to?
We're never done. The second we think we're done, that's when we start falling behind. So we're on Generation 3 plate carrier. I want to know from the Marines, what do they want out of a Generation 4 plate carrier? Because we need to be thinking about that. We need to be moving in that direction, because things will continue to evolve and we can always cut more weight. We can always make that piece of gear integrate better to the individual Marine. And I want to know. I want to know what they think. So when we do go out for different evaluations, we might be there to talk about helmets. But again, it comes back to that holistic view and seeing, okay, well, what other kit are you using? Is there something that you're buying yourself? Because I want to know, where'd you get it from? Why'd you buy that thing? So I can come out and I can try and design and buy that for the individual Marine, so they're not spending their paycheck on the individual kit. Definitely that feedback loop continues. It's not just stuff that we've designed in-house, but that feedback loop expands to what is the individual Marine using that might not be in SIF right now. That doesn't mean it's never going to be there.
Do you find that a lot of Marines are buying items not in the SIF with their own money?
Down in the infantry battalions, I know I've seen guys buy shooter's belt and buy different chest rigs. I bought some of my own pouches when I was going through as well. But I have a different perspective now being on the acquisition side and being in a position where I can actually affect it within the team of being able to go after those things and say, okay, hey, Lance Corporal so-and-so, you bought a shooter's belt. Where'd you get it from? Why'd you buy that one and not a different one?
Yeah.
I can go back out to industry and talk to them about what they are developing and try to get a contract myself so that way we can provide that for the individual Marine.
Because if we don't know they need it or want it.
Yes, we don't necessarily. There's a gap in the feedback loop where a Marine walks into the individual issue facility, they walk out with their huge gear list of things. How much of that stuff comes out of the plastic?
Good point.
I don't necessarily get that feedback loop until I actually go out to the unit and see what they are actually working with. And then I can start to ask questions about, okay, why this and not that?
Yeah.
Why'd you go after this individual thing? What are the attributes you are looking for? If this gear in the issued kit does not meet the muster, well, what do I need to do to adjust it?
Okay.
So we're constantly looking for those things. Especially if it's something that we can go after quickly, aggressively, buy a bunch of it, get it out there. And we're always looking for people who want to evaluate stuff too. So when Marines say, hey, I do have a problem with X, Y, or Z, like, okay, do you want to be a part of my evaluation? I will send you that piece of gear that I think would meet your requirements and have you test it out for me. Let me know. Have an impact on the next set of kit for the Marine.
If a Marine wanted to reach out, would it just be directly to you? Do you have them reach out to you or to the GCS?
We have inbox? A PM ICE organizational inbox.
Okay.
So we do get requests, whether it's for a quick reference guide or a technical manual or just questions about, can I use this? Can I not use that? We do get those emails at least a couple times a week. And it's everybody from Lance Corporal to Fulbert Colonel, who doesn't necessarily know where else to go, but that organizational inbox is a okay. very good one.
We slightly mentioned industry. Is there anything particular you'd like to see from them in the future?
Really, it's just encouraging industry to continue to innovate. There are so many good improvements that are out there, whether it's the individual kit, the hearing protection. There's really no limits to what industry can do. And I want to just encourage them to continue to innovate and continue to improve their gear just as we are doing our iterative design process. They're doing the same thing. And we have a lot of really good relationships with industry to continue to improve and be ready for that next thing. At the end of the day, when the next fight, those questions are out there. And we need to be ready, but we also need industry partners to be ready to surge, to build the equipment that we need to go fight that fight.
It's a team effort.
It definitely is.
Now that we talked about individual armor and all the work your team's doing, let's hear about you. So you're from upstate New York, correct?
That is correct.
But you went to school in Vermont.
I went to college in Vermont.
So how'd you decide to go to Vermont?
Oh, my grandfather was in the Seabees during World War II, and on the GI Bill, he went to Middlebury College in Vermont. My mother ended up going to the same college as well, and so it was kind of a natural progression to go from upstate New York over to Middlebury College.
You were already used to the cold.
Definitely.
So that was a start.
Played ice hockey growing up, so I was good on the cold side of things.
Did you play any other sports?
Soccer, hockey, lacrosse. And I played a little bit of rugby for a couple of years in college.
I could see rugby. Yeah. Did you know when you were going to college that you wanted to join the Marine Corps, or was it kind of after you finished up school?
I knew in high school that I wanted to serve in some capacity. Went to Albany Academy in Albany, New York, and we marched. We did a whole military portion of the high school.
Okay.
We wore a shirt and tie to class, but we did have a uniform where we marched in the parades. We did Veterans Day, Memorial Day. We had drill competitions. So there was that. And then knowing, you know, the opportunities that serving and then using the GI Bill had afforded for both sets of my grandfathers, I knew I wanted to serve at some point.
One of your grandpas was a CB. And then what was the other one?
He was in the Air Force,
okay.
Army Air Corps at the time, but he was building bombs.
Neat. You recently joined the acquisition AUK field. What led to the shift in your career?
So, yes, I applied for the lateral move of a military occupational specialty, and I was accepted a couple months ago to now be a ground acquisitions officer.
Congratulations.
Thank you. A lot of it came down to the scale and scope of impact. And by that, I mean, we're putting helmets on every Marine's head right now. And when you look out across the different programs at Systems Command, the impact is large and long lasting.
Yeah.
There are amazing professionals in this organization who come to work every single day thinking about that individual Marine at the lowest level and how their program or project supports making sure that that Marine is effective. It doesn't matter where the Marine is, from boot camp all the way to currently deployed Marine units, they are using gear and equipment that came from Marine Corps Systems Command. And having the opportunity to be part of that organization and contribute to that impact is the biggest draw for me.
It's literally the boots that they're wearing to the vehicles, to the weaponry, everything comes out
yes.
of SysCom.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about your life outside of work. Do you have any special hobbies? How's your dog doing? All of those.
Luna's doing well. we travel. What's great about living in the National Capital Region is being close to airports and being able to go see family, whether it's all the way up in Maine, all the way down to Florida, and basically everywhere in between. But my wife and I like to do a lot of travel and just get off the beaten path and go see things that aren't necessarily on the touristy, you know, front page of the social media type thing, but we get off the beaten path and see some really cool stuff and eat some really good food.
Do you bring Luna with you?
For a lot of them, we do bring the dog. So she's a bit of a handful, but she gets a little bit emotional if we don't bring her with. So
she wants to be part of the adventure.
She always is. She's at the forefront majority of the time.
Is your family still in New York?
Yes.
Upstate?
My parents are upstate, and then my mother-in-law is right outside New York City. So it's pretty easy to travel up. And
it's not too far.
No.
Now is the part that everybody looks forward to, which is the lightning round. So I didn't share these with you, so it'll just be at the right at the top of your head. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. What's your favorite TV show, book, movie, or podcast?
I'm a huge fan of The Terminal List.
Okay.
As a show. One of my former machine gunners is actually on that show.
Interesting.
Shout out to Smitty is his character's name.
Okay. Now I'm going to have to watch it. If you could have an unlimited supply of anything, what would it be?
That's a tough one.
Do you want me to ask a different one?
No idea.
What's your favorite emoji?
I guess probably the thumbs up, because that's probably the easiest one. That's I don't really get into the emojis too much.
That tracks. Morning person or night owl?
A little bit of both, which keeps it interesting.
What's your favorite cuisine?
That is a tough question because we lived in Japan, learned to make our own sushi. My wife got me a smoker. So, you know, pulled pork, brisket, ribs, pork belly, that all comes out of the smoker now. So
you're an equal opportunist when it comes to food.
Definitely.
Okay.
And we always want to try new things.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Equipping the Corps. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or on social media. We'd love to hear from you.